Ranjana Jamunati Ravana Shari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari
Pied Paramahamsa Privrajakacharya, Ashuturushatushi, Shimarasivan Grace, Sivaktivananta Swami Prabhupada Kijai, Rajagranta Shima Bhagavad Gita, Oops, Shima Bhagavatam Ki, Gaura Brahmandi, all glories to the Summon Devotees, all glories to Shishiguran Gauranga. Om Agyantamirandasha, Giranjana Shalakaya, Chakshurun militam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha shri chaitanya manobishtam stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupakadamayam adati swapadantikam vancha kalpaturubhyascha kripa sindubhyarevacha patitanam pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadarha Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 14, Text 29. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Oops, it's text 28 actually. No, 29. This is translation. The personal weapon used by Lord Krishna, the disc, is called Hari Chakra, the disc of Hari. This chakra is the wheel of time. It expands from the beginning of the atoms up to the time of Brahma's death, and it controls all activities. It is always revolving and spinning the lives of the living entities, from Lord Brahma down to an insignificant blade of grass. Thus, one changes from infancy to childhood to youth and maturity, and thus one approaches the end of life. It is impossible to check this will of time. This will is very exacting because it is a personal weapon of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sometimes the conditioned soul, fearing the approach of death, wants to worship someone who can save him from imminent danger, yet he does not care for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose weapon is the indefatigable time factor. The conditioned soul instead takes shelter of a man-made god described in unauthorized scriptures. Such gods are like buzzards, vultures, herons, and crows. Vedic scriptures do not refer to them. Imminent death is like the attack of a lion, and neither vultures, buzzards, crows, nor herons can save one from such an attack. One who takes shelter of unauthorized man-made gods cannot be saved from the clutches of death. Purport. It is stated, Hanim vina mritam na taranti. No one can save himself from the cruel hands of death without being favored by Hari. the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Bhagavad Gita, it is stated, Mam eva ye prapadyante mayam itam tarantite. Whoever fully surrenders unto Krishna can be saved from the cruel hands of material nature. The conditioned soul, however, sometimes wants to take shelter of a demigod, man-made god, pseudo-incarnation, or bogus swami or yogi. All these cheaters claim to follow religious principles, and all this has become very popular in this age of Kali. There are many Pashandis who, without referring to the Shastras, pose themselves as incarnations, and foolish people follow them. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has left behind him Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. Now referring to these authorized scriptures, rascals take shelter of man-made scriptures and try to compete with Lord Krishna. That is the greatest difficulty one encounters when trying to promote spiritual consciousness in human society. The Krishna Consciousness Movement is trying its best to bring people back to Krishna consciousness in its pure form, but the Pashandis and atheists who are cheaters are so numerous that sometimes we become perplexed and wonder how to push this movement forward. In any case, we cannot accept the unauthorized ways of so-called incarnations, gods, cheaters, and bluffers, who are described here as crows, vultures, buzzards, and herons. So we're hearing about the material existence and the calamity of material life. And the idea is to inspire detachment from material life and the pursuance of spiritual culture, culminating in pure Krishna consciousness. So in this verse, we're hearing about the time factor, which is compared to, which is said to be the chakra of the Lord, Hari Chakra. And no one can defeat this chakra. It is a time factor. Time is an energy of Krishna. It's also said to be non-different from Krishna. Krishna says in the Gita, Kalosmi, that he is the time factor. It's one of his energies. And of subduers, Krishna says also in the Gita, I am time. Because time subdues everything, but nothing can subdue time. Strength cannot wrestle with time. Beauty cannot charm time. Intelligence cannot reason with time. Money cannot buy time. So all the various opulences that one can get in the material world, however powerful their influence in terms of relative entities in the material world, has no influence on the time factor. So Prabhupada would often say that that the most precious thing we have is time, because even one moment of time lost cannot be bought back by any amount of wealth, even a moment. So time is very powerful. It's the most precious thing that the living entity has and could utilize for the evolvement of spiritual culture, culminating in pure Krishna consciousness. Now ultimately, because time is destroying everything, all the opulences that we procure in the relative world is ultimately destroyed by time. So that's of course a miserable experience if you have attachments to those opulences. Either your beauty, your strength, your health, your wife or girlfriend, that was previous verse, and so on. If we happen to be attached to those things, then time factor is certainly going to steal those away from us. So one experiences great suffering. And then ultimately, time factor brings the lion of death. Death here has been compared to a lion. So death is the most miserable experience for a living entity. Although sometimes people tend to bluff in their safe condition that they're not afraid of death. But the reality is, because Krishna has told us, that death is very frightening for the conditioned soul who's eternal by nature. The material world, actually the objects of the material world, which are apparently meant for the enjoyment of the conditioned soul, cannot actually bring him happiness due to the influence of death. In the true sense, the Bhagavatam gives the example, it's like a man sentenced to death. Sometimes they have this practice that a person who is sentenced to death will get a last supper, the final meal, before he's executed. So at that final meal, even if all favorite preparations are given to him, he cannot be happy. Even if you give him, like, yesterday, I saw the Ayurvedic doctor yesterday, and I was told not to eat pizza. Oh, they asked me how many times do I eat pizza, and I said not very often, maybe once or twice a month like that, not so often. I said, okay, that's good. But I had pizza last night because they had made it, and then yesterday there was pizza and it looked really good. It looked like Pizza Hut. I like Pizza Hut pizza. I mean, I haven't had it since I was a devotee, but anyways, I was tempted to get it, but I just had one yesterday. I just told the Ayurvedic doctor I only eat once a month, twice a month. So I was able to resist last night. So they make like a pizza like that, and very other palatable dishes can be there, pasta, so many sweets, etc. And they offer it to you right before the execution. Then you cannot enjoy even a single bite of those wonderful preparations, because after you, every bite is actually miserable, because after you finish, then, you know, the next scene is execution. So the Bhagavatam actually gives this example in the 11th canto, that the objects of this world cannot actually bring satisfaction to the living entities on account of the influence of death in the material world. Mrityuloka. This world is called Mrityuloka. It's the world of death. But the living entities think that they are enjoying because they're distracted by that reality. They have to be. Otherwise, you couldn't really pursue anything enthusiastically in the material world. Everything becomes immediately purposeless once death comes up. Therefore, even to talk about death is a very taboo topic generally in cultures where people are trying to enjoy. If you talk about death, it's like if everyone's at the dinner table at a restaurant and they're talking about, you know, superstars and all sorts of things, you say, hey, you know we're about to die, right? It's like this is like very awkward. Immediately everyone becomes silent and it's taboo. You shouldn't talk about those things. Because as soon as the topic of death comes up, then everyone is forced to realize the futility of whatever they're doing if it's not the pursuit of spiritual culture. So sometimes we are forced to come in face to face with our mortality. In conditioned life, we try our very best to forget about it and distract ourselves and pretend that it's not there. It's like an ostrich who puts his head in the sand when attacked by a lion. You know, the lion's coming and about to kill him, he just sticks his hands. He's not there. And he thinks that so we can try to do that. We do try to do that, and oftentimes we are successful thanks to the help of the Maya Shakti, who's got the covering potency and the distracting potency to assist us in our delusion of happiness in a world of death. But then, as the time factor moves forward, we are forced to come in contact with our mortality. Either we get disease, we have some failing health situation, or some situation comes up in our life where we're actually face to face with the reality that we're going to die. And at that time, and of course, we try to take shelter of various medicines and other sorts of things, but then when it becomes conclusive that, or it becomes very apparent to you, to one, that I'm about to die, I'm actually on the verge of death, then oftentimes he may actually be inspired to seek spiritual culture at that point of realization. As they say, there's no atheist in the foxhole. There's a saying like that. And this is really true, because Chandramali Maharaj, he tells us his story where he was actually atheistic, he says. And he was a soldier in the war, like an air pilot, I think. And his plane was crashing. And he said that, God, if you exist, if I survive this plane crash, I'll definitely seek you out. And by a great miracle, he survived. And so, true to his word, he actually began investigating God. And shortly thereafter, he met devotees of Krishna. So they say, they have this saying that there's no atheist in the foxhole. Death has the power to inspire God consciousness. Unless you're heavily demoniac, like Hiranyakashipu or something, then death does have that power to inspire some sort of pursuit of spiritual culture. Unfortunately, as being mentioned in this verse, is that there are a lot of speculators who propagate their own idea of spiritual culture without reference to any authorized literatures, particularly the literatures of the Vedas. They come up with their own speculative ideas of spiritual cultures, their own idea of God, their own idea of worship of God. And generally, they have very attractive ways of decorating those types of false conceptions. And so the living entity, face to face with the lion of death, take shelter of some of these false doctrines, which are compared to buzzards, vultures, herons, and crows. In other words, flimsy birds. If a lion is chasing you and you take shelter of a bird, what are you going to do? Actually, he'll fly away, leaving you hanging. And that's exactly what these philosophies do. They ultimately end up leaving the living entity hanging without any real shelter. So the word for this is durashraya, a false shelter. Because of being face-to-face with death, we realize our need for shelter. And the only shelter is actually Krishna, as Krishna has appeared in this world to inform us. Because he knows we'll take shelter of something false. That's the tendency. Because we're in illusion. We don't know actually what is the real shelter. So Krishna has appeared, and he has told, I am the real shelter. By taking shelter of me, you can cross over all the difficulties of material existence, including death. He has told this point for the benefit of the living entities. But rejecting the authorized literature, rejecting the mercy of the God, people take shelter of these other doctrines, which are generally decorated very nicely and palatable to the living entity. They have a nice flavor, because the idea of surrender is generally not completely compatible with the enjoying souls, on account of we thinking ourselves to be supreme. And the idea of complete surrender is not the most attractive idea, which means eternal subordination, and those types of words we really don't like. Subordination, inferior, service, even though the word service was not a very attractive idea, maybe in a certain context, in a philanthropic context, service was attractive because I'm still like the boss, I'm still on top, and I'm rendering service for these poor, insignificant persons like that. But in another context where you have to be like a waiter or you go and serve that person, it's not a very attractive idea. So then it gets attracted to other ideas, which with a false notion of God and a false idea of worship. And these are compared to flimsy birds that cannot protect one from the lion of death. Just like this, Dharashraye, Bahir Artamanina, Natevidu Swatikatemi Vishnu. Not knowing that Krishna is the actual shelter, they take shelter of some false doctrine. And then Andanyatandai Rupaniyamanas, Tepisha Tantram Uradam Nibada. They're compared to blind men, these false doctrine and blind persons. And we are following them. So we are also compared to blind persons. How will a blind man lead another blind man out of the ditch? Just like if you're blind and someone asks you for directions, that is not very useful. How you will give direction to the person? You are blind. But in Kali Yuga, the situation is, I am blind, and someone asks me for directions, and I say, I think it is this way. You're a blind fellow. How you will know which way it is? You cannot see anything. But as soon as someone inquires from me, what is it? It is this way. And then they say, how do you know? My heart is telling me it is this way. And this way, people are very much misled. One type of, Prabhupada says, one type of rascal, he becomes God or some leader, and another type of rascal is following him. And this is the situation, and so Prabhupada says here in the purport, due to this reason, this is the greatest difficulty one encounters when trying to promote spiritual consciousness in human society. And that's a fact, and nowadays in the universities, they make people study all these various philosophers. Many of them are really foolish, and the proof of their foolishness is that their life, many of them ended up committing suicide or ended up in an insane asylum. Like Nietzsche, I think, is famous. He's famous for saying God is dead. And everyone loves that idea. Yes, yes, God is dead. But he himself, at the end of his life, ended up in a sane asylum. He saw a man like beating a horse or something like that. And he couldn't reconcile his atheistic doctrine with the harm that was coming to this animal. And he was feeling, having emotional attachment to that. So he ended up just cracking up, going nuts. And Sartre, I think, is another one. He's an existentialist philosopher. This existentialism is really dangerous. Many people go crazy reading that. And the funny thing about it is that in Northwestern, during the wintertime, they study these existentialists. Wintertime is like the most depressing time of the year. The sun isn't out. we're under the control of the modes of nature, so when the weather is down, we feel down also. And during that time, they teach them existentialism. And then they wonder why these people are committing suicide and so on at the universities. So these philosophies cannot actually help these people. They're blind philosophies. And they're following, blind people are following these blind philosophers. And the result is they both end up in the material world, birth after birth. Te pisha tantram uradam nibhada. They remain bound to the material energy. Although sometimes in certain cases, and I would venture to say rare cases, persons may feel satisfied by their mental adjustments to the material energy. You know, you can see a glass is half empty or half full. So I choose to see it as half full. So by that mental adjustment, a person may feel temporarily content or satisfied with the miserable conditions of the material existence. The mind is such that by the adjustment, you may be able to adjust temporarily. But the reality is you don't get out of the material world. You don't get out of the material world just by taking shelter of something illusory. So this is the greatest difficulty one encounters when trying to promote Christian consciousness. We try to preach Christian consciousness, and immediately they start quoting all these guys, Sartre and Nietzsche. I met one philosopher at University of Chicago, and he, oh my God, he was bewildering actually. He started quoting so many philosophers, and then he would quote one thing, then he would quote another philosopher counteracting that, then he would quote another philosopher counteracting that. So as he was doing this, I said to him, I said, you sound bewildered. And he said, I am bewildered. And then he started philosophizing why that was okay. And then he quoted another philosopher why being bewildered is actually a natural state of existence. And this way, it was like, how was I to, and I couldn't, all that word jugglery, and I was just like, wow, what to say to that? You know, this is the greatest difficulty one encounters. So many speculative ideas. Actually, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta is told that in the age of Kali, mental speculation is the particular disease of this age. And mental speculation confuses everything. It makes everything bewildered. And unfortunately, this is the situation in the age of Kali. So it is very hard for people to take shelter of Krishna. And ultimately, it is very difficult to even philosophize with persons because they're not so intelligent to, or are always attracted to the philosophy. Generally, people like stories. That's the usual. We like to hear stories, and they should be funny also. Nice, funny stories, and with my own poor added to it. Now, stories are good because you can manipulate them according to your own ideas, usually. Generally, so people are more attracted to the stories. So then, when the devotees try to propagate Christian consciousness, they meet with great difficulties. On the one hand, people are generally not philosophical. On the other hand, if they are, they've heard so many other types of philosophies that they come to the conclusion that maybe there is no truth. Maybe it's all just relative. This is generally now the popular idea, that because they make them study so many philosophers and they all contradict each other, people come to the conclusion that there is ultimately no ultimate truth or absolute truth. And in this way, they can't take shelter of Krishna. So this is a great difficulty. Of course, devotees, we have to go on giving people the opportunity to hear about Krishna. Because ultimately, taking the Krishna consciousness is not just a matter of theoretical understanding or a great grasp of the philosophy. That's a small portion of actually taking the Krishna consciousness. The other major portion of people getting inspired to take the Krishna consciousness is devotional sukriti. By the influence of devotional sukriti, they actually come to Krishna consciousness. It's called bhakti sukriti, bhakti umukhi sukriti. So then, devotees, we go out and try to give Krishna consciousness by chanting the holy names of Krishna, giving Krishna prasadam, talking the philosophy of Krishna. Even if you don't talk much philosophy, but you just keep saying the name Krishna throughout your presentation, Krishna, Krishna. And then, even if you end the sentence, so that's the end of the discussion, Krishna. And then people are like bewildered. You know, that's why are you in a sentence like that? I just to help them out. And they need as much help as they can get. And the more you say the name Krishna, the more benefit they actually get. Even if you say in the middle of your sentence, so this material world, Krishna, is very miserable. Krishna, and they're like, what's going on? They think something's wrong with you, but actually, you're helping them out. Because by hearing the name of Krishna, you actually increase their devotional sukriti, which is the main reason why people actually get a chance to take to Krishna consciousness. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur described that actually, he describes the power of a devotee to give Krishna consciousness to others in the Chaitanya Shikshamrita. He describes that for the Premi Bhakta, he has unlimited power to give Krishna consciousness. Even if the person is completely a demoniac individual, he can give Krishna consciousness. He's so powerful. He says a Bhav Bhakta, one who has Bhava, which is the preliminary stage of pure love of God, then if the individuals have sufficient sukriti, then the Bhav Bhakta, by his personality, can elevate a materialistic person immediately to the stage of ruchi. It says by his personality, not even by his example, by his personality. People get attracted to his personality, immediately they become elevated to the stage of ruchi. If they're on the material platform, if they're a sadhaka, they become elevated to the stage of bhava. And he says for sadhakas, either they're practicing Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti or Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti, then by their teachings and by their example, if the individuals have sufficient sukriti, they can instill faith in them. That's a good start, but it's not like ruchi and bhava, but it's a pretty good start. So the sadhakas, the devotees who are just sadhakas, they've yet to attain bhava and prema, then their teachings and their example is very important for inculcating Krishna consciousness to the people of the world, if you're just a sadhaka. If you have bhava, then your personality will be sufficient. People will just get attracted to that and become devoted. And if you're a premi bhakta, you can do anything you want by the dint of that power. So as sadhakas, the teachings and examples are important according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And they can inculcate faith. And that too, only if the persons have sufficient sukriti. If they don't have sufficient sukriti, the sadhaka can't do much for that individual. Therefore, we may find it difficult as sadhakas to inculcate Krishna consciousness. And that may be on account of insufficient devotional piety. So therefore, we have to Krishna, 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 hey, Krishna, 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 hey. What's the next one? Krishna, 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 Krishna. Rakshamam, Krishna, 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 Krishna. Paimam, Krishna, Keshava, Krishna, Keshava. Oh no, the first one is Rama, Raghava, Rama, Raghava, Rama, Raghava. Rakshamam, Krishna, Keshava, Krishna, Keshava, Krishna, Keshava, Paimam. And that's how you open your presentation. And everyone's like, what the hell is going on here? Because that's their sukriti has to be increased. Otherwise, you would not be able to influence it. Even if you have a good example, even if you have really good teachings, you won't be able to influence them because your power to give Krishna consciousness is very limited and they don't have sufficient sukriti. So we do things like go out in the street and do Harinam and give them prasadam. And we try our best to speak something about the philosophy, making sure the name Krishna is spoken sufficient times. In order that their sukriti will increase. And then there's some hope for them. Otherwise, in the modern age of Kali, where there's so many crocodiles and sharks of various philosophies, they can hardly hope to cross the ocean of material existence without being devoured by these philosophies. And the worst of them, of course, is the Mayavada philosophy, where someone comes to the conclusion that they're God. That's like a tamingala fish. And tamingala fishes, they can swallow whales whole. So that's a pretty powerful fish. A whale is not a small creature. And they can swallow whales whole, tamingala fish. So Mayavada philosophy is like that. If a Livyanti comes to hear that, then it would be very difficult for him to be rescued from that. Even a great soul can actually change his mind hearing such things. So this is the purport. When death comes near, we should chant the name of Krishna. Take shelter of Krishna. And as practicing devotees, we already know this philosophy, but many of us don't take so much shelter of Krishna. So coming face to face with death may be very helpful in doing so. So the devotee is never in a precarious situation in that sense. Even if he is not fully serious yet, death will help him to come serious. Okay, so that's it. Are there any questions? All right, yeah, she knows this.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Ashraya means, Ashraya is another way of saying Sharanagati, surrender. Actually, taking shelter is probably a more fitting translation for the word Sharanagati than surrender, because surrender tends to convey an idea of like force, whereas taking shelter is like loving, like conveys a more idea of like a loving submission. Now, so it's the same. So Nam Ashraya or Sharanagati, there are six limbs of surrender: to accept that which is favorable, to reject that which is unfavorable, to depend completely on the Lord, to understand that He is my maintainer, He is my protector. Fully Atmanivedana, everything you possess, you understand it to be Krishna's, including your body, mind, intelligence, and then utter humility, karpanya or danya, utter humility, a sense of wretchedness and just feeling oneself very fallen and helpless. These are the six aspects of taking shelter. So you chant the name like that, that's called pure chanting. If you, one chance with surrender, it's pure chanting. Shuddhanam will come out. And then from there, he can develop Krishna prema. So that each of these limbs can be discussed elaborately, but that's what it means. Does anyone else want to say anything? Okay, yeah.
Thank you, Prabhuji, for sharing your realization. I mean, you made a very strong point here today in your class, like death has a power to inspire God consciousness. But only to the people who are seeking answers, like there is something beyond that, beyond this body. Because we have seen, like, people, they commit suicides and they are pretty healthy, just because their mental pain becomes, like, push them in mode of ignorance. So actually it seems one who is not properly placed,
one who is not what?
Properly, who is not beyond mode of nature, he will not become God consciousness.
No, that's of course not a true statement, because we're not beyond the modes of nature, and we've started Krishna consciousness. So of course becoming God consciousness does not require you to become beyond the modes of material nature first. Otherwise there would be no question of conditioned souls developing God consciousness.
Death can inspire God consciousness, but into the people who think beyond this body. Otherwise, people in hell.
Not necessarily. They need not be actively thinking beyond the body, but as mentioned, they have to be sufficiently pious in order for suffering to have that kind of effect on them. Srila Prabhupada has also described this in the Gajendra Moksha pastime. And when Gajendra is attacked by the crocodile, so then he has a moment of truth. He starts fighting with the crocodile at first, realizing he's going to die. He decides to take shelter of the Supreme Lord. And Prabhupada says there is due to his Sukriti. He says if you don't have sufficient Sukriti, then when you suffer like that, then you become more atheistic. So yes, the influence of piety is required for people to benefit from their suffering. Otherwise, they don't benefit much. They either they're pushed down into the lower modes, as you say. Like that, or they become more atheistic in their demeanor, their mentality. Okay, so Darth wanted to say something there. Yes. Trinada Pusanishina.
Thank you for class. I have a question about man-made religion. I believe that everybody that has a faith believes that their religion is true, and so, you know, they may have a holy book or whatever that guides them. So what is the distinction between a religion that is man-made and that which is not?
Yeah, being broad-minded in this question, when Prabhupada would be asked a similar question, which is the best religion? Prabhupada would ask that question. We ask that question quite a bit. And Prabhupada would give an answer, whichever one helps you develop love for God, that's the best religion. So answering this question in a broad-minded context, we can say that those those traditions that are based on some form of holy books, which promote love of God, we would say is something genuine to that. And we would be a little bit less broad-minded. We could say probably everything is man-made in Kali Yuga. It's because it's not based on the Vedic literatures, which is a fact generally. Like, a lot of the literatures have been composed by men. I mean, one thing that's unique to our presentation is that the Vedas are said to be coming directly from God. And not even in terms of it being like God spoke to a prophet and the prophet wrote it down, but directly coming from God, which is a little bit, that's unique. But being more broad-minded, which is a better approach to take in the age of Kali because of the mass confusion that's going on, we would say that they have, based on some holy book that's promoting love of God, then Prabhupada would not discourage. He would say, I'm not saying that you would have to come to the Krishna consciousness movement. I'm saying do what your tradition is teaching and follow those rules for the purpose of developing love of God. So taking the broad-minded approach, if it doesn't promote love of God, we will challenge the genuineness of it. If it is ultimately promoting love of God, which is what we're also promoting, although it may be based on some other books that they're using, then we say it's something genuine, and we would encourage people to follow that. And we may point out contradictions, like if they are eating animals, for example, how can you have love of God on the one side and eating his creatures on the other? That is, I'll read you something Jai Dwaita Maharaj wrote. You'll love this. This is really funny. You'll love this. This is hilarious. You want to hear something hilarious? Jai Dwaita Maharaj has a very, dry with a funny sense of humor. There's a password here, and I'm not God. I don't have omniscience. I'm God. I am the Supreme Lord. Okay. Hold on 2 seconds. Acharya Nishtha Prabhu sent this to me before he left. Give me a second to pull it up. Hare Krishna. Okay, there's a Chinese today. Hare Krishna. I'm sorry. Whoa, what's going on? Just chant Hare Krishna. Okay, yeah, I found it. So this is called Blessed Is House, a poem by His Holiness Jai Dwaita Swami. You can already tell it's funny. Blessed is house, O Lord, we pray. Make it safe by night and day. Bless our humble vestibule. Bless the TV, bless the pool. Bless our silly little notions. Bless our weak supply of Trojans. Bless, oh bless the internet. Bless our liquor cabinet. Bless our kitchen for its features, places where we roast thy creatures. That's how I ended up thinking of this. Bake them, broil them, nuke them, fry them. Blessed Lord, please sanctify them. While we're scarfing down their wings, livers, legs, and other things, breasts and tongues and blood galore, bless them, Lord, forevermore. Bless the toilets where we sit, bless the urine, bless the... Bless our fish and parakeets, bless our dog who fouls the street. Bless our dull routine behavior, bless our envy of our neighbor. Bless this household where we play, make it safe by night and day. Bless the children, bless the wife, bless our empty, mundane life. That's a very nice poem. Anyway, I thought of that because of the roast the dying creatures, you know, fry them, nuke them, broil them. So we might point out contradictions in the idea of love of God and something like that. But if they're promoting love of God, then we say, yeah, nice. Jai, please follow, like that. You want to say something?
Since the topic of suicide was brought up, which is essentially an existentialist thing, I had two questions of suicide that we hear in Krishna consciousness. Like Sanatan Goswami, like he was so, he was having a apparently some skin disease and he didn't want to see Lord Chaitanya. He didn't want to burden him or trouble him. He didn't want to make him touch. So he was kind of, his consciousness was, let me rather die in the car, before the car, rather than just see. So I just wanted to hear your comments on that. And then yesterday, one devotee was pointing out some news of some devotee committing suicide recently, and then the topic was brought up by the comments. It was like everyone was blaming ISKCON and GBC for not taking care of devotees when they're elderly. I'm not sure if you have any comments.
I did hear about this story. That was I know this story. I just heard the story also. Well, on the first question, I don't have my own comments to offer, but I can offer Lord Chaitanya's comments or his feelings about Sanatana Goswami's suicide. And he was not very happy about it. And Lord Chaitanya said that because you have surrendered this body to me at the time of initiation, Diksha Kale Bhakta Kale Atma Samarpan, at the time of initiation, you fully surrendered to me. So now your body's actually become my property. And I have many things to do through this body. So how dare you take someone else's property and destroy it? That was Lord Chaitanya's opinion of his notions of suicide. And even though you may say in consciousness he was thinking, but then Lord Chaitanya wasn't very satisfied with that level of consciousness. That was Lord Chaitanya's opinion. So the body is Krishna's body, actually, or the spiritual master's body. So we're, technically speaking, don't have the right to do what we want with it. Of course, in terms of our day-to-day existence, that's very hard to live by that because we have things that we're attached to. So some hours of the day, okay, this is the spiritual master's body, and I'll render service to Krishna. And these parts of the day, okay, it's been converted to my body again, and I do my own activities. That's a very exalted level. This is the Ishavashami Dham Sarvam principle to the highest extent, where one thinks his own body and mind and intelligence is actually Krishna's. So he doesn't even think things that are separate from what will be pleasing to Krishna, because it's Krishna's mind even, it's Krishna's body. So we want to ultimately achieve that level of Krishna consciousness. And Lord Chaitanya wasn't happy with Sanatana Goswami's decisions to commit suicide. As far as this other incident that you're mentioning, which I also had come to find out recently, those are complicated topics, generally speaking, you know, because there are many angles of vision in which you can take this discussion. One angle of vision, which I'm going to just mention here, is that the word devotee is a very exalted. I mean, we're sadhakas, we're aspiring devotees. One time, a devotee went to Srila Prabhupada, said, Srila Prabhupada, as Vaishnavas, and Prabhupada immediately cut him off and said, not Vaishnavas, trying to be Vaishnavas. So I like to give context to this word devotee. Devotee is a very exalted entity. We are trying to be devotees. So in a society of persons trying to be devotees, it is expected to be many aberrations and anomalies and mistakes and all sorts of problems and issues and so on. And so devotees who criticize other devotees or other aspiring devotees who criticize other aspiring devotees for various negligence and so on are ultimately unfounded in their criticism, for they're also not devotees. on account of their being able to see so expertly the faults of other aspiring devotees. So, so then from the angle of vision of we're trying to be aspiring devotees and create a proper society that is conducive for becoming devotees, then there will be mistakes made, and then from those mistakes they would have to be corrected. And unfortunately, incidents up to the point of maybe a devotee giving up his life and so on may take place. And that's very sad indeed, and something that as a growing society of aspiring devotees, we would have to learn from that to try to prevent such things from happening in the future. If it is actually the case that our society was the cause of that person's anxiety that led to him doing such an event. If granted that that was actually the case, then we have to learn from those things and try to grow as a society of aspiring devotees. So we should not compare a society of aspiring devotees to devotees. Devotees are a very exalted entity. And in that way, we might be able to reconcile some of these mistakes of the society with these types of heavy incidences that come up like that. Yeah.
You had mentioned that Krishna is time. In the spiritual world, is there time?
Yes, of course. There is time in the spiritual world, but it doesn't have that destructive feature like in the material world. Just like Krishna's pastimes are being conducted in eight divisions of the day, they call Ashtakaliya Lila. He performs his pastimes in eight divisions of the day. And for those who are on the higher stages of rag sadhana, then they will meditate on those pastimes in the eight portions of the day. So time functions in the material world to facilitate exchanges, but it doesn't force the bodies to grow old and decrepit or bring you the fruits of karma and et cetera, as time does in the material world. It just functions in a way that augments Krishna's pastime. Just like envy exists in the spiritual world too, for example. That's an interesting idea. This is discussed in the Nectar Devotion. Sometimes we hear we love because of envy, but there is envy in the spiritual world. But it augments rasa, it augments exchange with Krishna. An example of envy in the Bhagavatam is, you can read it, it's in the 21st chapter of the 10th canto, the Venu Gita, where the gopis are envious of the flute. They say, what is this nonsense? That flute is a male, and he's getting the nectar of Krishna's lips, which is meant for us, you know? And this is completely off. He's got a male form. We got female form. That nectar is meant for us. How is it the flute? So then the Acharya described, this is an example of a particular type of sanchari bhav. I'm not going to describe all these things. A different type of devotional ecstasy called envy. And it actually augments the pastimes of Krishna. So also time, everything in the spiritual world simply augments exchange. That's the amazing thing. In the material world, everything makes exchange more and more complicated and difficult. In the spiritual world, everything helps the exchange become more and more awesome and sweet and amazing. So that's the difference of how things function here and there. Okay, are there any other questions or comments, concerns? Final.
It has been seen, like from Hiranyakashipu to the technical head of Google. I mean, right now, in Northwestern, I came across to a presentation of a technical head of Google, which was webcasted. And he was explaining the idea of time, the role of time in one's death. And he...
The role of time in one's death.
Yeah. And he was saying people will become immortal in given 20 years. Because there will be a technology by which we can add time, the rate we lose. We can add it faster than...
Fantastic.
So, I mean, and we see the same propensity in, like, you know, in our, like, from Hiranyakashipu also.
Sure.
He also want to, you know, add time to his
life,
so to become immortal.
Sure.
So do you think this is the same clan?
The same.
I mean, they belong to...
The demoniac class of men, yes. Namam duskriti namuda, narad, what is that? Prapatyante naradama, Maya Prahita Gana, Asuram Baba Mashrita. So yes, they're all in the same category, demoniac and foolish and knowledge stolen by illusion and lowest of mankind. Same category, man. Dushkriti. They have some merit in the form of intelligence, and they're misusing it for all these useless things like adding time to the bodies. So what to do? We already described in class, we have to increase people's sukriti, so that when they get increased sukriti, they'll say, this is sheer foolishness. And then they will reject such things. Now people are entertaining the idea that it might be possible. This is fantastic. And they're anticipating, you know. But if they have sufficient sukriti, they wouldn't waste their time with all these things. So that's another thing that the demoniac leadership has to keep people sinful. Otherwise, they won't be able to bluff them with all this garbage that they're presenting. If people had more sukriti, they wouldn't be able to bluff them with all these things. Because people will say, no, this is foolishness. Death is coming, we gotta surrender to God. But because people are dushkriti, and the leadership is keeping them dushkriti, so then they present all these bluffs and people buy into it. So their only hope is if somehow their sukriti can be increased. So our process is chanting the holy name of Krishna. That's the main way of increasing their sukriti. Okay then, so are there anything else anyone wants to say? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.